This week, on a special episode of WebMD's Health Discovered podcast, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
When I first heard the words, "you have lung cancer," I was in shock.
It's a diagnosis that changes everything. So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Introducing Home Care Plus, a new subscription service from Lowe's that helps make life easier by giving members a hand with home maintenance. Let Lowe's tackle the tasks you keep meaning to do, like electric dryer vent cleaning, replacing hard-to-reach light bulbs, and more. Subscribe to Home Care Plus for just $99 a year and consider your to-do list done. Members get more at Lowe's. Available in select zip codes only. Cancel anytime. Non-refundable fee. Product purchase required. Terms and service restrictions apply. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Today on The Grave Talks, Why Spirits Haunt, a conversation with Bill Vockroth. A large family lives together in a multi-acre homestead. The vines of love, trust, and understanding grows as the family evolves. Little girl plays with another little girl down the road. They laugh and giggle and have a good time being children. The only problem with this picture is that they are all dead, yet the family unit remains intact on the other side. Today, we discuss death, spirits, and the dynamics of the dead with paranormal investigator Bill Vockroth.
So I was started getting fascinated back when Hans Holzer was writing his books, which goes back a while. A lot of people might not even be familiar with them until they come up with the Holzer files. But I was reading those books, and then jumped forward a few years. I was interested in the paranormal, but it wasn't really talked about back then. Mm-hmm. You were kind of looked at like a freak. You just didn't admit to people who like ghosts and you like ghost hunting. So I jumped forward a few years, and it gets into 2000, I think it was 2004, when Ghost Hunters came on TV. Now it became more mainstream and acceptable. So that's when I really started getting back into it. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've delved more into getting equipment. I've got a team together about two, three years ago. What got me really back into it was my girlfriend had passed away. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, I had gotten diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. Mm-hmm. So those two events make you wonder what is like on the other side, what happens to us when we pass.
Sure.
And so I got the equipment, you know, everything that you see on TV you can buy online. So I went out and formed a team, bought the equipment, and we started just going, you know, relatively local here within a couple hours of where I live. We live in the Finger Lakes area of upstate New York. Mm-hmm. And we started getting results and EVPs and spirit box and all that stuff. And it just evolved in from there.
When you were a child and you had the interest, or when you were younger and you had the interest in reading about Hans Holzer and his research and such, was your experiences at that time limited to what you were reading and studying, or was there something else going on in your world? Were there any experiences that you were having that were helping to drive that passion and interest?
So we'd always heard stories, you know, like kids talk around, the campfires, and kids get together when you're young and they all say, "Oh, I've heard about this house being haunted." There was always that house in the neighborhood or down the dirt road or out in the woods that was, you know, haunted. And I got to the point to where I would see things like out the corner of my eyes and just sense things. And I never really understood if that was true or not. But when I started reading those books, it made me realize that maybe there really was something. Maybe it wasn't just crazy talk. 90% of it probably was crazy talk and stories, but the way Hans did it, you had to kind of believe. You know, you kind of thought maybe there really was something there. And so that's where my initial interest in it began.
What were some of the specific areas of interest that you had in the world of the paranormal? Obviously, you can go into, you know, demons, you can go into lost loved ones, you can go into all different areas, but what specific areas really spoke to you and caught your interest in his work and the paranormal?
So I liked knowing that there's maybe things on the other side that we could help. You know, a lot of times you'll hear that help me thing. Mm-hmm. What can we do? Can they see us? Can they hear us? When we leave our body, you know, what happens? Mm-hmm. You know, there's always the, you know, you can either go to heaven or you can go to hell. But what happens to the people that the spirits that we communicate with as ghost hunters that are here? Why are they here? What can we do? Are they afraid to move on? Are they stuck here? And I've always wondered that. So I try to, as we do our investigations, we try to find out who they are, what their story is, why they're here. I don't really like to deal with demons too much because from a paranormal investigator standpoint, the demons aren't going to tell you the truth anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, they're here to trick you and all of that stuff. But I just like to find out why the spirits that we talk to and communicate with and see why they are really here and why they won't move on.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because what I've experienced in this world of doing ghost shows, podcast for almost 8 years now, and then before that commercial radio for 20 some years and talking about this stuff, is I've ended up with far more questions than answers. You jump into it going, maybe I'll kind of get some direction here. Maybe I'll start, you know, and I'm more informed now than I was when I began, but I have more questions and more possible directions and more information I can give someone who asked me a question about it. No, obviously, solid answers on much, but possibilities. What was your outlook at the beginning when you're thinking about ghosts and hauntings and things of that nature, the traditional haunted house, if you will, not talking about demons? What was your outlook on that moment when you began, you know, with all those thoughts that you may have been brought up with heaven and hell and, you know, this or that, but why are they here? What was your initial mindset? And then what has that transitioned to, if at all, over the years of being involved in this?
So when I first started getting into it, a lot of those things, we thought that they were evil and demonic and mean and trying to play, you know, the typical poltergeist that you always heard about. Mm-hmm. Poltergeists are pretty rare. I mean, they're still there, but they're pretty rare. But, you know, why would they do things, throw things at us, you know, jump out and scare you? Typical, like you see in the movies. I mean, that's true. That's Hollywood. But why would these things happen? You know, why are the chairs moving and things flying off? Are they trying to scare us? And then you find out that it's not always the case. So we're hosting, my team right now is hosting public ghost hunts called Awaken the Spirits at a local museum here. Mm-hmm. In town. And we have encountered a family of spirits in there that are very, for lack of a better term, friendly, like the Casper the Friendly Ghost. They interact with us. They communicate with us. And we don't get that feeling that there's anything wrong. It's just they like where they're at and they're here. So it's changed my whole thought of what spirits were from the time I was a child to now. Mm-hmm. Now it's just people that have passed over. They aren't all evil and mean. They're just like where they are.
How do you square up if someone is to come to you, maybe someone who's very religious and they just had the, they're brought up with the mindset that, you know, when you die, you go to heaven or hell, that's it. Anything that is out there that is not there is evil or it's demonic and it's playing the role of you know, a deceased loved one. And it's all, you know, it's a farce. It's trying to pull you in. How do you square that up when somebody comes to you with that kind of mindset and you know, and you believe that these don't seem to be demonic spirits. These seem to be spirits of Uncle Bill or whoever it may be. How do you convince someone or express to them that maybe that thinking is not exactly accurate, but at the same time, not dismissing their, you know, religious belief system?
Right. So I run into that quite a bit. And ghost hunting overall is still just theory, right? Mm-hmm. We can't prove anything. We won't know until we ourselves pass, and then you'll find out. Then it's a little bit late. So I do agree with them. There are spirits out there that will try to trick us. A lot of what you hear is a demonic spirit will appear as a child, because that's where we let our guards down. But it's more of a feeling that we have, and it's more of an experience, because if you're interacting with a spirit, I personally don't believe that a demonic spirit is going to wait too long. I think what they're going to do is if they're going to do something, they're going to pose as something friendly week after week after week. Eventually, they're going to get what they want.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to dismiss the religious aspect that people say. They might be right. I might be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be the other way around. But I won't. I'll listen to their thing. I honor what they believe. But we won't know until we all ourselves have passed. So we really won't have any answer. But they're totally entitled to their belief, and I totally will listen to that. I'm a religious. I believe in that too, and I'm a skeptic. But they're entitled to their opinion, and I'm entitled to mine. And I could be wrong, or they could be wrong. We won't know until it's too late.
What goes through your mind, and just your opinion on this, when you have a spirit, like you were saying, in that museum, that seem to be kind of a family of ghosts? Why?
Right.
And that's the big question, is why are they still here? Why have they not moved on to the next plane? If there is the next plane, the heaven or the hell or whatever that you may call it, what keeps them here? Is it a choice that they're making? Do they have any say in the matter? Is it they're just trying to deal with it? What's your opinion on that?
So with the family that's in the museum, they seem to like it there. So we have an SLS camera, which I think you're familiar with. It's the one that shows the stick figures. It shows the spirits.
Sure.
There is spinning wheels and looms and things like that up on the second floor, which, is, like I said, it's a museum that covers, you know, life back in the 1700s, 1800s. And with that, we see them working on the looms and working on the spinning wheels and going about life as if they're still here. So maybe there's something about them just moving across and living on the other side of the veil. Maybe there's a different dimension where they're just living, and maybe they don't know they're dead. Maybe they like it here. They like just life, you know, the way it was, and that's the way they're going to be. The family that we've talked to, we've come to find out that they've had 12 kids, which sounds like a lot, but back, you know, in the 1700s, 1800s, they had that many kids for farms, and that's what they lived on this property. So other ones that I think about that we've asked is, I think that knowing that when we pass and we go through our judgment day of whether we, you know, we're allowed into heaven or we go to hell, and the light going to heaven to be judged isn't going to stay open. This is just the way I've understand through my time.
Sure.
It only stays open for a certain amount of time. And if you think that you're not going to be taken into heaven and you don't want to go to hell, but you're okay right here on this earth as a spirit, that you're not as apt to go there. You know, you don't want to go to the principal's office thinking that you're going to be expelled if you can just stay in the classroom, or go to your boss thinking you're going to be fired. You just got to hide.
Sure.
So that's what I think about certain evil spirits, is that's why some of those are here, because they know that if they go, they're going to be sent to hell or whatever they did. Or some just aren't sure, so it's safe here.
Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting way of looking at it. And quite possibly, I mean, in many cases, would you say that, you know, they're it's fear-based thinking, even on the other side? One would hope, and I guess
exactly,
Sometimes have the idealized thought that, well, on the other side, all of our issues, if you will, whether it's our fears, our anxieties, what have you, well, maybe all that's erased on the other side. But the more and more,
right,
I hear about hauntings and the intelligence of what seems to be, you know, spirits that were the living ones, that were once walking this earth, that were people, sometimes those issues, those proclivities, the ways of thinking continue on to the other side. So if you are someone who, no matter what, you know, you think maybe I'm to blame, but you really aren't. You're just, that's just how you feel because that's how your mind works.
Right.
You may be
if you're not sure, you'd rather play it safe.
Yeah, you may be more cautious to go to that light, even though you get to the light. They were like, of course you're welcome in. Come on in. You didn't, that wasn't bad. So what? You spilled the milk. No big deal. But they're going to hold on to that fear and then sit around here. If they're still here. And they didn't take that opportunity initially to move on out of an abundance of caution and the what ifs. Is there ever a way? Do they ever get a second chance to go to that next dimension, or is that where some believe that human intervention is required to make an effective transition to wherever they should ultimately be going for the long term?
Right. So I think I think. Sometimes it takes us convincing them, you know, it's, they aren't sure, but we'll sit here and say, look, it's really going to be okay. You know, go to the light, go to heaven and he will forgive you. And sometimes I just think they just need the extra push, you know, because they're not sure. Give them a little reassurance, or maybe they've been here long enough that they're thinking, okay, maybe I just should go try that. And, you know, we talk and, maybe they go and maybe they don't. You know, if we help, we help. But when you get the help me ones, those are the ones I think that, okay, maybe this really needs to happen. You know, and then if we say, okay, we forgive you for what you did, maybe that's extra help on the other side for them.
That human interaction there, that convincing, are we in that state? Are we literally opening a door for them? Is that door that go to the light? Is that light there for them to go to without our suggestion, hey, go to that light? Or can they at any time muster up the courage if they're able to say, okay, I'm done here. I'm going to go to that light. Or does that window close and needs to be reopened by someone on this side?
Well, maybe they can do it. I mean, this is all just theory.
Of course, yeah.
Me guessing,
but, yep.
But maybe they can do it, but they aren't sure. You know, or they don't know how to. Maybe they just may, or maybe God leaves it into our hands. He's like, you know, you guys decide. You know, if you think he should come up, I really don't know. But it's nice to think about that we can help these people move on if they really want to.
Sure.
You know, that's what I like. I like to, you know, I would hope that somebody would do that to me if I was stuck someplace and say, hey, I need some help, and someone stout. So that's what we try to do.
What's your thoughts on the idea of some of these, not all of these, but some of these interactions that we have, not necessarily the ones where you're trying to help someone move on, but you're just kind of getting sporadic communication, sensical sporadic communication, but it seems to be coming from a conscious state and people identifying themselves, maybe a path in life, maybe what they're doing, and they seem to be kind of living a life of normalcy, of what one a living person would be doing, but they're communicating to this to you from the other side. Do you ever think or theorize that maybe what you're communicating with is almost a mirror of what you're receiving on our side is what they're receiving on their side, meaning is it an alternate reality? Is it a different place in time? Are they sitting there trying to communicate with spirits too, and they think they're communicating with a spirit, but it's you trying to communicate with a spirit on this side, and both kind of have this assumption that the other one is dead, but because both are in alternative realities, they don't really, neither of us see it that way.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never really thought about that. That's a really good point. Yeah, maybe they're just as happy to be on that side and have the communication open over here, you know, and a lot of times we'll do that. A lot of times when we do our investigations, I like to say, you know, can you see us? You know, how many fingers am I holding up? Just to see if they can actually see us or if they hear us or if they know us. You know, there's times where we've gone in and we haven't even said anything and we've said, you know, do you know who we are? And they will say our name. And I don't know how they know who we are.
Yeah,
that's kind of spooky that they would. So it's like they know us without even introducing ourselves. So we try to find out information. Like a lot of times they say they can see us. So I don't understand that. We can't see them, but they can see us. It's almost like a, what do they call this, a two-way mirror.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some sort of intelligent communication that we have. And then there's you also get the residuals, which are just going through their pattern of life that they don't even realize that we're there. But, yeah, it's interesting to think about like that.
When it comes to the residuals and things of that nature, is that a conscious entity where they don't realize we're there? I mean, to us, we're watching something replay itself over and over. It's like watching a hologram or watching a rerun on television.
It is.
Kelsey Grammer is not playing Frasier in Seattle at this moment in time, but we can watch it, and it looks like it's going on right now because that's what we're seeing on television. Is that something where they are still mentally there and they don't realize they're in almost such a dreamlike or hypnotic state that they're repeating those things over and over? Or is it just that? Is that just an image of energy that's replaying itself over and over?
Yeah, I don't think that is so much as a physical spirit. I think that's an imprint on the environment as an energy, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow I think that was just, you know, as a time warp or something. I can't really explain that, but it's something that we just happen to see occasionally. And I don't think there's really a spirit there because I can't see having to live walking, you know, soldiers like you see in Gettysburg walking across the field over and over and over and over again for eternity. I think that's just a traumatic experience or something that happened at that time that is imprinted, in the environment, as you think, and we have to see it. I think that's all it is. I really don't think that's a spirit there. I think it's just the environment that's imprinted.
That being said,
the Frasier show, they're not really on stage doing that. That's just something that they did. They're, long gone doing whatever they do. But we're still just seeing the show being replayed.
Yeah.
And that's what I believe that is.
Let's talk about the museum a little bit. Let's talk about you've been there. You've expressed earlier in the interview that it seems to be almost a family of spirits that are there. Tell me about that. Tell me what you mean by family of spirits and what has brought you to that conclusion.
So the museum is called the Heritage Village of the Southern Finger Lakes, and it's here in Corning, New York. It's the Finger Lakes section of upstate New York. It's kind of a tourist town. We have the Corning Museum of Glass, and 25 minutes away is NASCAR. But this museum was primarily funded by schools, mm-hmm. school kids, you know, doing their field trips. When people come to Corning, they always went to the Corning Museum of Glass, or they went to the wineries in the area, and they just never thought about going really here. It wasn't super popular. My team was looking for a place that was local. We all live within 15 minutes away to ghost hunt. Every place in this area is, you know, Buffalo's 2.5 hours away and other places are an hour and a half. Instead of driving to that, we thought, man, if we could find a place that's local, let's try it out. So I had my admin contact them. We went down and we did an initial ghost hunt. I met with a guy named Pat Monahan, who runs the museum. And he met us out in the parking lot. We were the first and only team that's ever been in there to investigate. It's a village. They have a tavern and a two-story building. It's called Ben Patterson Inn. And they have a one-room schoolhouse out back, and they have a log cabin, they have a blacksmith shop. It's not real big, but it's a village. So we went in to investigate. And the very first night we were in there, we heard a disembodied voice. Now, Pat was a total skeptic, and I go in as a skeptic. I'm not the person that believes in everything that bumps and moves in the night is a ghost or a spirit. It's just not. While we were in there the very first night, we heard a young girl giggle and run, just a child. So we had the spirit boxes out. Before that night was over, we found out that there's a mother in there. Her name, which she just likes to be called Mother, so that's what we call it. I don't know what her first name is, but she just wants to be called Mother. I said, you know, what's your husband's name? And she said, Zeke, Ezekiel. We call him Zeke. And we found out that this little girl's name was Emily. So we went back a few more times. And when we went back and I said, you know, how many kids do you have during one of our spirit box sessions? And Zeke he came through and said, lots of kids. I have all this on audio. Mm-hmm. He said, lots of kids. And I said, like, two or three? And he said, 12. And I went, 12? So then I said, how much did you live here? And they said, yes. And I said, how much land? I don't know why I said how much land, or maybe I asked if it was a farm. And they said 7 acres. So we started asking questions that were relevant, and they were answering questions. You know, we try to find out who these spirits are and what they're, because we've, like I said, we've been the only team that's been in there. This is a blank slate. This isn't going to some place, you know, Gettysburg, that's been done 100 times, where people know what's going on and we just confirm it. This is all blank slate. So that's how we found out. But we went back 5 or 6 times. And since then, then we opened up to public ghost hunts. And even during the public ghost hunts, we're finding out more and more. We're finding out names of other children. We're out in the schoolhouse. We're getting kids' names out in the schoolhouse. There's a log cabin. We found out that there's a guy that lived in a log cabin. We found what his name was. And we're building the knowledge of what is at this museum. And people like it. And it's a lot of fun. We enjoy it, too.
Where do you think the sources of these spirits that are in that museum? Why are they there?
So from what we've found out is they didn't live in the museum. The museum is it's a house. It's not like they call it a museum, but it's a tavern. It's a house. It was a lived in house.
Okay.
It's called the Ben Patterson Inn. It's an old homestead for one of the first homes that were in the area.
Okay.
It was more like, if you want to think of like a stopping point for travelers that came through the area, had the tavern, had the rooms upstairs where they stayed, and that type of stuff. And from what we can understand, the family lived in that area. And I don't know why they just decided to move into that museum.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because it's a big enough house for the family to be in. There's a kitchen, those old-fashioned ones with a hearth fireplaces where they cook. There's a dining room. I mean, it has all the luxuries of a house where a large family would live. Many bedrooms, beds, the whole thing. And they like it there. And they have interacted with us. Now, out in the schoolhouse, we do an investigate out there, too. The schoolhouse wasn't originally on that property. The schoolhouse and the log cabin, they were moved here from someplace else. So that's a whole different set of spirits, but we found out that there's a spirit out there named Wendy, who is 6 years old also, and she has said that she is friends with Emily, who lives in the house. So apparently they can go from building to building on the property. So these are the questions that when we investigate, I tell my investigators, I have a great team, by the way, I tell them, let's try to find out as much as we can. You know, let's get the ages, let's get the names, let's, you know, ask questions like that instead of the standard, you know, are you here, can you see us, how many, you know, we had a small, we took a group of youths, a youth group in there, and let kids investigate during the afternoon, and they were asking the most amazing questions. They were asking, you know, what's your favorite game to play, what's your favorite color, things like that we as adults wouldn't even begin to think.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just finding the more and more information about these spirits, and it's worked out great.
As you look at this, have you been able to do any research to the names that you found to residents that have been in the area in the past?
So we've tried to do that. The problem was that we had a flood here back in 1972, which seems like forever, but I was 11 years old. And it wiped out a lot of the records.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't really figure out, and I'm going to try to see if there's other places where we could go, and maybe there's some that didn't get lost. Maybe there's some somewhere, because we have names, and we have ages, and we have the property that how much property they had. And it doesn't seem like it'd be that hard to find out, but I just have to have somebody that can go down there and dig through the files and try to see what we can find out. But we haven't been able to do that just yet. I don't even know where to start for something like that. That's not my expertise.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather ghost hunt than try to dig through. So I'm trying to find somebody on my team that would do that, but that's going to take a lot of dedication to try to find. We can't find anything online. So we're going to actually have to go physically dig through it and find it.
What makes it so interesting is this concept that this whole family is there. I mean, that right. You know, people, they obviously, a large family like that, you know, many would grow up and go their own way and do this and that. And several probably would not even be, you know, in that area. So the idea that they're all back there, you know, in this area as this family unit, circa 18, whatever it might have been, that would almost make you think
30 to 50, 18, 50.
Yeah. That would almost make you think that this family all died simultaneously to be in that state. Or is it something where they're conscious entities, it seems like. It's not just a residual thing. Yeah. So it makes you wonder, well, how did that happen? Did they all die at one time from something? Or is this, you know, a choice in death of, I want to go back to be 8 years old again on the farm?
Yeah, so that's another thing is that we don't understand. And one of the things I don't like to do is I don't like to have myself or my investigators ask, how did you die?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not here anyway. Maybe other places we do, but especially when it's kids. You know, we don't like to talk about things bad because we've got a good communication going. Let's try to keep it just happy and moving on as best we can. They've said that they had, like I said, they've had 12 kids. We haven't communicated with all 12 yet. I think we've only communicated with like 3 or 4. So maybe some had moved on.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't understand why, you know, school kids will have a bunch of kids in the schoolhouse as child spirits. Why they're still here? Why they haven't moved on? These are questions. Like I said, we're all into the theory and nothing. We don't know for sure all of these answers. But it definitely makes you, it's definitely food for thought. Makes you think, why are they here? Maybe Emily just likes to be with her mom and dad and doesn't want to move on. That very well could be. She's 6 and she likes to play, and she likes to play pranks. And, you know, she doesn't hurt anybody. She just likes to, we take her toys.
Mm-hmm.
She likes to play with toys and things like that and talk. And you can hear her giggle and laugh and things. But, we don't have all the answers, you know.
Sure.
I don't understand why they would be here. But they're still here working, so. So maybe it's on the other side of the veil. They don't realize they've passed on. I mean, the last thing I want to do is have to be working forever in eternity. You know, it just doesn't make sense. And we've said to them before, you know, are you here? And we've heard them say, I'm tired, you know, or it's bedtime, things like that. So it's almost like they're living on the other side or, you know, for lack of a better term, going on with their daily activities on the other side of the veil.
And that's what makes you wonder sometimes of, Are you coming across to them as the ghost?
We very well could be.
That's,
you know?
Yeah.
That's absolutely.
And that is where we're going to have to pause part one of our interview. In part two of our conversation with Bill, can the living haunt themselves in a residual form after a traumatic event that did not result in death? Literally the living haunting the living. As Bill found that his level of sensitivity has increased after experiencing the passing of his girlfriend and his own battles with cancer. How much does the feel or of a historic property or home and environment influence the odds of a location being haunted? Why are the spirits drawn to his museum? Sometimes spirits show themselves as children to gain our trust when they are in fact not a child at all. How does one determine quickly if they're dealing with something that was human or something that was inhuman? Spirits of children tricking us to let our guards down. Until next time for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.